Hello and welcome to the People and Flow podcast. This episode here's Neville Pritchard speaking with Craig McCoy. Craig McCoy is a seasoned HR professional with experience across many sectors. Craig is currently the HR director for luxury assisted senior care brand Sunrise Senior Living. In this episode, the pair discuss the importance of people support provision throughout the organisation, the advancement of technology in the industry, and a culture of care. If you would like to know more about the topics discussed, click on the links in the description and tune in for the next episode.
Craig, thank you very much for seeing us. And we're here in the offices of Sunrise Senior Living in Beaconsfield. Perhaps you could just start our conversation by just introducing yourself and your background and a little bit about Sunrise.
So first of all, thank you for the opportunity to have this discussion. I'm a career HR professional of some 35 years standing. I've worked in, I think the last count was 16 or 17 organisations, I'm starting to lose count, of which 15 I've been as HR director. In more recent times, I've tended to do interim roles, and this is my ninth interim role here at Sunrise, but it's likely to be quite a long one. I've been here about 6 months and is likely to be here for quite a bit longer than that. I've worked across sectors. I've worked in media, technology, healthcare, property, insurance, and health and social care. I've done several roles. Here at Sunrise, we are a leading premium end care business. So we provide care homes to private residents as opposed to local authority funded. And we operate very much at the luxury end of the market. So our proposition is that we provide a hotel, boutique hotel kind of experience for the elderly. The average age of our residents is about 85. We are an American-owned business, very large in the US. We have approximately 350 care homes in the US. We have about 50 care homes in the UK. And we operate under two brands, the Sunrise brand and the Gracewell brand. In all of our homes, we offer nursing as well as residential care. And we offer many elements of what you describe as a boutique hotel experience, including things like fine dining and choice of activities and programs. But the focus on the elderly. We have homes throughout the UK, but primarily in areas which are relatively affluent for probably quite obvious reasons in terms of the market demographics that we target.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And the care and social care, home and social care industry is a growing one in the
Indeed.
UK as people live to a longer and older age.
Yeah.
It itself is bringing new challenges, I would guess, in terms of the way service is provided, but also in terms of the way staff are attracted and developed and generating the sort of service levels that would be expected for that kind of premium.
Yeah.
What sort of challenges and issues have you observed specifically in this market? We'll talk about other experiences later.
Yeah. So, as you say, we attract a sort of clientele into our homes, which are quite rightly demanding of our services, and therefore we set the bar particularly high in terms of the services that we provide. We do exceptionally well in terms of the provision of clinical care. So we are consistently ranked as both number one and number two in the CQC, the Care Quality Commission ratings. Sunrise is normally number one, Gracewell number two. So we're recognised for the very high qualities of care that we provide. But we experience many of the same people issues, HR issues, as the rest of the industry. Mm-hmm. Regardless of the facts of whether it's private or publicly funded. So we have challenges like the rest of the care industry in attracting and retaining staff, particularly because our homes are all located in areas of high employment. And as a result, it is often more difficult to attract people to work in the care industry, given that the care industry typically, levels of reward are typically reasonably low. And we deliberately pitch in above average levels in terms of compensation and remuneration. Say in areas of full employment, where our homes are based, it's often difficult to maintain full staffing levels. And that can lead to expensive use of agency spend, for example. Clearly, we have a need to make sure all of our homes are fully staffed at all times. And as a result, we use more regularly than we'd like to contract labour, agency staff, where we're paying high premiums, which tends to be very costly, but also is not welcomed by the residents who value consistency of provision. So use of contract labour is definitely an issue, and it obviously impacts our margin. But in terms of attraction generally, we have to work very hard to maintain our pipeline of recruitment. So we have to be quite creative in terms of the ways in which we go about attracting our staff. We use a variety of means, everything including the use of more classic methods such as job boards, advertising, increasingly using social media. In many cases, more old-fashioned means, such as posting adverts in shop windows, leafleting, all of those traditional methods can still work. Local newspapers.
Well, you obviously need quite a range of different types of staff.
You've got
qualified carers. You've got nursing. You've got the full range, dining, cleaning.
Yeah,
so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So you've got quite a range of the type of person. When you're recruiting, what would you say were the things that take qualifications for particular roles as given?
Yeah.
Beyond that, what would you say really, really matters to you? What are you specifically looking for in the type of people?
Yeah. So the key thing is that we're looking for people with a good, strong value set which fits with our culture. So we want people who want to make a difference and work in care, recognising that people always have options to find more highly paid jobs, but the care industry is not one of the highest paid industries to work in. However, we believe that we can provide very attractive careers and roles for people and provide a very high level of job satisfaction in terms of working in care. We do look for that value set from the outset to make sure that people firstly understand what they can expect from a career with Sunrise, and that they're more likely to stay with us and be retained and have a career with us, as well as generating customer satisfaction, resident satisfaction, which is, at the end of the day, very important for us because in order to sustain our business, we need to be we need to have full complement of residents, and we need to maintain that level of residency for as long as possible in order to be financially successful.
Yeah, interesting, because you're looking for people who have a value set that fits with that of Sunrise, but. What do you think when they come for a role with you is the opposite? What really matters to the people that join you? Because you mentioned career.
Yeah.
For those sort of people that are going to stay with you for some time, what really matters to them when they're applying for the job?
Yeah, I think, as you said, in some cases people apply to us because they just want a job in care, and we know that... any given time that people are applying to multiple roles within the care sector. So our brand is not as well known, for example, as some other brands I could mention, which are perhaps more household names in the British consciousness. So we have to work harder to promote our brand. We believe that we can provide sustainable career opportunities for people over time and make sure that they receive the investment in them. So for example, we're doing much more in terms of learning and development, going beyond the pure mandated technical training that we need to provide to people because they work in the care industry, and obviously that's part of a regulated environment. But to provide the learning development opportunities, both as individuals in terms of the interpersonal skills and development that they need, but also as managers. So we can offer career development into management and leadership roles.
Yeah.
And we're investing much more now in leadership development, particularly for our general managers and their deputies, who are really the linchpins of this organisation in terms of running each of our homes, each of which has a very substantial list of deliverables in terms of metrics.
Yeah.
So the performance of homes is something that we keep a key watch on. Every week, every month, we're always looking at the key performance indicators of our homes. The general managers are absolute linchpins to actually achieve those metrics.
Yeah, in that's interesting. Just picking up on that, because we see this as a challenge across a number of industries, and we'll come back to that in a second. But just specifically on the metrics, the sort of value sets that you're recruiting for, and the kind of ways in which those are brought to bear, on behalf of your residents.
Yeah.
What kind of metrics do you have around that type of people delivery?
Yeah, so first of all, we look at resident satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So that's one of our highest metrics. It also forms part of the scorecards for our management in terms of bonus. Mm-hmm. So we're always looking at the satisfaction of our residents, which obviously is reflected in their length of tenure, but also our level of occupancy to actually attract people into our homes. Because word of mouth is very important as well in terms of ensuring that our homes remain full and that people are satisfied, they have a good experience. And that reflects with the commercial success that we look for in our homes as well. So we're obviously looking at our top line revenue, we're looking at our margin, and the driver of that is always going to be occupancy levels and length of tenure. So that's always reflected in that. I mean, where obviously we differ from perhaps more public sector care providers is that we are a commercial organisation, so we live and breathe our commercial margin. So we have to make sure that we have the right balance between our commercial objectives and our clinical objectives, and make sure we provide the highest possible care, but also we achieve the financial margins that we're looking for to be a successful business.
What's nice is that there's a direct link between the provision of what is good for the staff and the people in mm-hmm. the organisation, and the commercial success, and yep. you're really focusing on output is roughly yep. you know what you're saying.
That's right.
That yeah. if we go and look back and just we'll come back to see Sunrise Senior Living in a minute, but if we look back in time to your experiences in other industries, do you find or have you seen any change in the way that people support is being provided?
Yes, I have. I mean, obviously, I've watched changes affecting the HR profession for over three decades. So I do go back to the time of personnel management. I don't quite go back to the time of welfare. I've seen trends come and go, and I've seen the maturity of the profession increase over time. I think there are some things that never quite go away. I mean, there's always a constant debate about whether or not HR directors should sit on boards of directors, for example, and that's a perennial debate as to whether or not the people function is recognised at that senior director level within organisations. So I think there's definitely something there around the perceived importance and status of people yeah. in the profession.
Yeah. Earning, demonstrating some sort of value, whether you're in the room or not.
Yeah,
Needing to be conscious and aware. Your the last little part of what you said then was quite intriguing for me, because we in our research have been looking at other people's perception of the value of HR. And there is still a big disconnect.
Yeah.
You know, the conclusions are pretty pretty significant in terms of the belief that it's not actually a specialism. And therefore, you know, it needs to be doing what it's told as opposed to expertise providing value.
Yeah.
That's still a barrier.
Yeah.
Have you seen a shift in that?
I would say there are some green shoots coming through. Yeah, so I would agree that in times of recession, for example, it was very clear there was a downgrade in the number of senior HR roles on the market. And I observed a number of relatively senior HR directors losing their jobs and their replacements being downgraded to a more operational HR function rather than strategic. And I think when push comes to shove, the strategic element of HR gets neglected and operational efficiency becomes the name of the game. And I've seen a lot of senior HR directors leave and the number twos basically get the job, but not at the same level. So I think there's a general downgrade operational HR provision in times of stress when the economy is under pressure. I think that's true. I think the other aspect to it is there's a bit of a vicious circle in the sense of the shortage of really high potential capable people entering the profession. And as a result, you know, managing their careers through organisations and being recognised as having the potential to influence at the most senior level within organisations. And because of the shortage of such individuals, as a result, there's a danger that HR is perceived as a secondary function rather than the primary one.
Yeah. And of course, it's one of those interesting functions where it's a combination of a whole range of different services.
Yes.
So wrapping it into the one title of HR is perhaps not helping.
That's true.
And if we recognise, as you said, you remember, go back to personnel, well,
yeah,
you know, that's really seen as the sort of defensive bit. And in times of stress, that's where it reverts, which is pretty much ticking the box and so on.
That's right.
However, looking at the workplace from another piece of work we've done, there are challenges that are very different, and you've alluded to them a little bit earlier in terms of the sheer extent of change. You know, we did some work in the care sector only 2 years ago, and there was very little technology available anywhere in the entire business. That's changed phenomenally now in terms of the record keeping of records, of resident records and needs and things that will help and the development opportunities and so on and so forth. It's in just a 2 year period.
I think that's true.
The challenge is therefore to the people inside the homes working there. They're having to adapt very quickly.
They are.
And the managers in turn maybe need to start looking at greater opportunities to impact their metrics.
Yes.
You see, you can get very lean.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of work done on that, I'm sure, in you're conscious of it with the commercialism. So what's next? Well, I am seeing, and I wonder what your thoughts are both here and beyond, an increase in the identification of levels of productivity, levels of commitment, energy levels in the workplace, all needing to be influenced by different ways of managing people.
Oh, definitely.
In order to lift performance.
Yeah.
So that the margin is increased on that side.
Yeah.
As well as on the other side.
It's it's really important what you're saying is in terms of we're all looking for that magic ingredient to unleash a high level of engagement and productivity.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to do that when you've got high turnover of people.
Yeah.
Because then you're always on that constant hamster wheel to
keep bringing in
new people, yeah, and getting them up to speed. Interestingly, we experience here, we do the normal kind of annual employee engagement survey that you find in the market, and we always seem to score very highly on levels of engagement. On the other hand, we have high levels of employee turnover. So you think, well, there's something not quite
it's not quite
integrated, and you'd expect there to be a strong correlation between levels of engagement and levels of retention. So I think the danger with traditional employee engagement surveys is that they can give you a false positive.
We've been working very hard on trying to look at those and say, actually, there's no need to benchmark. It's more important to understand what really matters to your own organisation.
And to
get the measures that reflect,
yeah,
A, your organisation, B, your industry, and then help you manage that and worry about everything else later.
Yeah.
Have you seen, because you've worked in 16 different industries,
yeah,
or it's different roles, but across a number of industries, have you seen any either examples of really innovative and different approaches to this issue, or
I've seen industries where there's been a very concentrated effort in terms of face-to-face engagement, in terms of co-creation of strategy and alignment of every role to strategy. In terms of unleashing the power of innovation and ideas and idea generation from the broader workforce. I've seen large amounts of effort being put into face-to-face workshops and communication. I think in many ways there's no real substitute for face-to-face. However, on the other hand, I've also seen the effective use of social media as a way of collecting more real-time input and ideas generation and feedback. So I think I can think of examples in my career where I've worked with organisations which have done both of those quite well. I can't think of an organisation which does both of those very well.
It's a struggle, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's a lot of, right now, there's an awful lot of effort being put into this, but a lot of it is sort of quietly sidestepping where the real core issues are, because the core issues are not being identified through the surveys. So there's a potential need here, not just in this industry, but across industries, to perhaps dig a little deeper and get a little bit more. What about us as a company? What have we got to do?
No, I'd agree.
And really start to dig into that, which is.
I think the regularity of the feedback in terms of engagement is really important. I think probably the we're seeing the death knell of the annual survey. I think the annual survey has had its place and is probably quite rightly being phased out.
Yeah, or just changed.
Yeah,
to help find different and do different, find out what you really need to know.
Yeah,
is kind of
helpful. Do something with it.
Yeah, do something with it.
Yeah.
And that's been the challenge. And I think that's one of the joys of listening to the sort of work you're doing here. And we'll come back to that now.
Yeah,
is that you're really taking a good long look at what you really need to do here. We have worked in this industry. And we've identified a challenge with the whole mandatory side of delivery, in that it's been it's been a demotivating factor.
Yeah,
In that, you know, you're getting people to do the same thing they've done for the last however many years they've been working here, or anywhere. So 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, they keep going on the same course every year.
Yeah.
So you're having to tick the fact that they've been trained.
Yes.
As opposed to, well, what more can we do with mandatory training? What can we do to bring it in line with our value set? What can we do to light it up so that people are excited about going on a new version and so on and so forth? And that was our challenge. But our secondary finding was that actually there was very little support because of the need for mandatory in the way in which people inside the homes were being managed and the way that the managers were being developed to achieve their commercial expectations, whether they were private or public sector, and generate added value for everybody or from everybody that was working there. You get high scores, but there's still 6% to play for.
Indeed, that's right.
With that in mind, you talked about increasing the levels of leadership and management training. That in itself, what sort of things do you think are really needed to help people with people? And beyond the mandatory and the leadership, what else do you think you... The challenge to the industry?
So I think it's probably true of all industries that there's a real challenge with management of people in terms of performance management. And like many other organisations, people are reluctant to have honest conversations and give real feedback. For whatever reason, because they feel personally uncomfortable with doing it, because they don't want to upset people, because they're afraid of losing people. You know, there are many reasons why people shy away from giving honest feedback. So I think having difficult conversations, having a robust culture of performance management, pointing out the consequences of poor behaviour, all of these things are there are issues in the care industry, but they're also across most other industries. Obviously, care is a highly service-orientated sector, and there are a lot of measures that you'd apply behaviourally to the provision of effective service, and lots of areas where things can go wrong. So I think performance management is really key in this sector. You know, extreme, it can go into, you know, issues of safeguarding. So, I mean, you're looking at the interests of residents and customers as well as the interests of employees. So I think the whole kind of dealing with performance issues effectively is a real core management skill.
I mean, picking up on something you said earlier between the link between engagement and turnover, attrition, that may well form part of the issue there in terms of when we visited homes. I was delighted to see just the sheer level of commitment people were giving to the residents. You know, it's fantastic. I was less happy when one of them thought I was there to see if I might stay there.
You're welcome. Settle in.
But if I had have been, then of course it would have been, it was a good advert in terms of the level of commitment to the job. I guess the difference is then achieving a commitment to the company.
That's right.
As well as a commitment to the the job. And that's a secondary kind of
It's thing. Multi-layered, isn't it? Because you need to ideally get that commitment to the person's manager, to their team, to their home, ultimately to the wider organisation. And it can break down at each of those levels. And those are some of the reasons why people leave. I mean, there's the old anecdote that people leave managers, they don't leave organisations, which has elements of truth to it in terms of the immediacy of your relationship with your line manager.
And the need for that line manager to appreciate and understand the tiered level of engagement that there is there
and
each of those challenges.
And
by opening that thought process, maybe there's a pathway there. And coming back to the annual surveys, maybe they don't need to be annual, maybe they just need to be local. But anyway, Craig, that's a delightful way to sort of leave our chat and to thank you for sharing your deep insights.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to episode 41 of the People in Flow podcast. If you'd like to know more about the topics discussed, click on the links in the description and tune in for the next episode. Thank you for listening.